Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And I don't know if it's exciting for you, but it's always exciting for me because I don't know just exactly how badly I'm going to screw.
Yes, this is one of those things where if you ever think for a moment about what you would say.
I don't ever think for a moment. See, let's just watch that.
That is why it's exciting. Because what we do is we just talk, and whatever comes out, we go, oh, well, I said that, so I better make it sound good. No, no, that's not how we do it.
Did you notice that S&P cut France's credit rating even though they don't have a Congress?
Yes. S&P doesn't have a Congress?
No, France doesn't.
Oh, right.
Yes. To a AA rating, and with a negative outlook.
This is the second time they've cut the rating for France.
And there's a really...
For good reason.
Yeah, and basically they are stumbling around. But the bottom line, and I want to emphasize something.
Wait a minute. I think you were repetitive.
What?
French people do stumble around, so...
As an economy, they're
stumbling. Oh, right, okay.
And there's huge protests... about the fact that the government is closing the government. The funny thing is, the government is simply removing some subsidies on certain food products that enabled companies to stay in business very inefficiently, and those food products, as a result, no longer are profitable to manufacture in France. In other words, basically trying to keep the jobs in France, but. The problem is, of course, that they're running some huge deficits doing it, and the French government has made an astonishing discovery.
Really?
Yeah. Hollande, I think his name is.
Yes.
That if you raise taxes really, really, really substantially on a very narrow sector
on the really rich people, they leave.
Who, by the way, live in the European Union, which means they can go to another country
without any consequences.
Without any consequences. They have this tendency to go to another country.
It's funny. You'll notice the same thing about New York and California.
I don't know. There's still an awful lot of people in New York and California.
Right,
I don't know that there's a lot of people fleeing those companies.
Well, yes, absolutely. If you look at the demographics of California, the last 3 years, for the first time since we've been measuring the population of California, the Californian population has shrunk. New York City has been shrinking consistently for a decade. So you raise taxes enough, and people are going to say, I really, really like this place, but it's too expensive to live here.
By the way, the New Yorkers just elected a new mayor who is Democrat.
Yep, first time for decades.
Pledged to raise taxes.
All right. Oh, boy. This is very much like what's happened in France. Sarkozy, at least, he was more moderate. But the new fellow is he's a member of the Socialist Party.
Yes, and he basically...
He did exactly what he said he was going to do, and he raised taxes really, really high, and now they're upset because the football team may be living in another country now.
That makes sense.
And they make a lot of money.
We have a call on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Well, it's right in, because I heard Toledo was dying... there are no more businesses in town.
None?
Is that true?
Well, there's actually quite a few businesses in town. We have a business and we're...
Goodness.
He certainly hung up on us. Salado is going through some difficulties, and the difficulties are mainly from a single source, and that is that the highway construction has really messed up the ability of tourists passing by to pull off and get into Salado.
Well, our office is located in Salado, so obviously there's at least one business there. And
you know, we're doing just fine. And
of course, we're not on the local economy, though. We have clientele all over the nation, so we don't see the local economy shifts so
much. I've actually done some checking with the more mundane side of the economy. Like, we only have one grocery store in Salado. They're doing just fine. We have only one hardware store. It's doing just fine. Both of those, by the way, are thanks to the government.
There are antique stores.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
The majority of people who live in Salado, and I mean
retirees,
are retirees
from the federal government or another.
No. They're not so much from the federal government. That's there. It's just they almost all receive Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And that government flow into the town is That's why people go to the store and go to the hardware store. Now,
right.
the tourist center of Salado, which has done very well in the past, is really, I mean, our sales tax receipts are way down, everybody else's are way up. And it really boils down to a very, very simple thing. The impulse, pull off, this is Salado, let's cruise through town and buy something, has done not well.
This is a here's an example.
Well, let me give you one other thing here, and then I'll let you do this. The second issue, and this is just my opinion, and Jake and I were discussing this on the way in.
Right.
They're having the annual gathering of the clans in Salado. Now, that used to, before Salado had a village government, used to, the whole town was full of this. Everywhere you went in town, there were tents set up and vendors set up and people doing things from one end of the town to the other. But we have, and this is one of the, and it was in a, there was a letter to the editor in the Village Voice, which I think is very appropriate. We have a village government that's dominated by right-wing Republicans who have so overregulated this thing, in my opinion, to the point where it's now all being held on a tiny little piece of dirt right around the
very
old
small.
School building. And it is not drawing the hordes of people who used to flood the streets of Salado it once did. And the thing is...
Yeah, I drove through Salado this morning.
That's a prime. This is a prime example.
Didn't have traffic.
Careful regulation by people who claim to want a smaller government has over a series of... This is just not the current village council or whatever they're alder people.
Aldermen. Alder people.
The older people. This has happened ever since we got organized in Salado, and I say we loosely, and formed a village government. And it is a prime example of how government works or doesn't work. When the people who were elected, I know most of them over the years, are people who are against big, intrusive government, and yet, little by little, they have created one.
Yeah.
Right down to the point where I expect momentarily to be fined because of some tree that I have
or
that may or may not be overleaning the street or something like that. And all of those incrementally are probably good things, but the end result is that it is damaging, very damaging
to
business
and
to commerce. And it is one of those things that, this is one of the strangest things. If you look at it very carefully, you can look at the presidency very easily. You will find that presidents generally wind up doing the opposite of what they came into office ideologically to do, almost without exception. The Republicans make government busy, bigger, and more intrusive. The Republicans and the Democrats tend to make government. By the way,
they may tend to make government smaller.
Yeah, I was gonna,
not intentionally.
I was going to talk about that, but you had something you wanted to say here.
Well, let's go ahead with that. This is a good subject.
Well, we are losing every analysis that I've read from serious non-political economists have strongly suggested. By the way, over the last 12 months, for example, the government's participation in the economy, the government consumption at the federal level, is down 2.8%. Down 2.8%. The government is the biggest customer as a single entity we have in our economy. It's buying 2.8% less stuff. It's employing the total economic activity attributed to the government is down 2.8%.
Our government is shrinking,
and it's
shrinking under a Democrat.
That's right. We have a Democrat.
No, I didn't intend to do it, but that's the effect, and this is why
people argue with this. Under the previous president created, instead of abolishing, who was a conservative Republican,
right?
Instead of abolishing departments, he made departments.
He was not a conservative Republican to the conservative Republicans. He was a moderate Republican.
He was at the time when he was elected.
No, he was a compassionate conservative is what he said, which means moderate.
All right. Well, at any rate, Richard Nixon, who most people consider to be conservative, increased the size of government.
Oh, yeah.
Clinton decreased the size of government. Now,
it's not intentional by any of these single administrations.
We just have this powerful tendency to do the opposite of what we think we're doing.
And that's generally, and this is interesting, it's generally because of the reaction from the rest of the country. When Bush was there and he was talking about make the size smaller, he began in that direction, and then he lost control of Congress. Congress went the other direction. this is kind of proof that presidents have a lot less power than they think they do.
But they do, on the other hand, have a lot of power. Let me give you an example. The Congress didn't propose a Department of Homeland Security with a whole new bureaucracy. The president did.
Well, that was a Congress took that proposal and wrote it after it was proposed
by
the president.
It
wasn't the president's plan.
He led into that. William Jefferson Clinton.
NAFTA.
Pushed a free trade agreement that's probably one of the most significant things right now.
One
of the
look at
a major thing that's helping.
Commerce, that's one of the most conservative things that he could have done.
It really has done a lot of good for the economy. You start looking through you want to know one of the great ironies, and this to me is one of the great ironies in the world. There's a big experiment going on out there right now, economically around the world. The history books will probably talk about it. The Europeans, who we consider to be somewhat to the left of Karl Marx in general.
I wouldn't say quite that far left, but very much left of what we are.
Yes. Are pushing austerity as the solution to the Great Recession, as we call it now. Okay?
So this is the opposite of what socialism stands
and
for.
So
it's like print money type things.
If you look at the European, the Eurozone collective government, and you look at their policy initiatives and their economic solutions to situations that they're implementing since the collapse, and you look at what the Tea Party wants to do, which is somewhat further to the right than the European Union, they're almost identical.
Yep.
But here, now it gets better. The Chinese, who are technically communists,
you're right,
are the people who are saying no social benefits. Cut the social benefits we have. Free enterprise will get the job done. Family values are the most important thing. Children, take care of your parents. We don't need no stinking Social Security or Medicare.
This is exactly what I was planning on coming to.
It's just amazing to me.
Right. The third plenum. I mentioned this at the end of the last hour, and people are going, I don't even know what is a plenum. What is a third? Is
I have
something
four
air conditioning?
Plenums in my house.
When a new head of state in China comes around, about a year into his office, he has the third major meeting with his party leaders. And since 1978, that meeting has been the meeting that they announce the major changes that are taking place in the economy. And it's been since 1978, major changes in a opening up of trade. And I think it's quite funny that they call it liberalizing the economy, when actually, if you think of the term liberal here, we're talking liberal here means something different. We would say conservative to remove regulations. What they're doing to remove regulations on their economy, and that's taking place right now. They are learning from us. They are looking at what we do, and they're saying, let's see what we can figure out, the things that work in the American economy, where they are encouraging trade and they're encouraging business. And let's take out the things that don't work, like Social Security and Medicare, the things that are weighting down the system, the huge governmental expenses. It's like the irony here is so blatant and huge. It's like everybody that claims to be communist is moving towards being capitalist, and everyone that's claiming to be capitalist is moving towards being communist. It's just a strange situation.
And this is, you think we're talking about something political. We're not. This is to do with your investments. There are a lot of major factors that have to do with success or failure in investing, and one of them is understanding how critically important it is to ignore sentiment, ignore your emotions, and look at the facts. And the facts generally will run.
It's very, very difficult when politics gets
almost
involved.
Well,
emotions.
It's almost perfectly. The facts, we call it, I say this to people a lot, investing is counterintuitive.
Yep.
And not just, I don't mean just anti-intuitive, I mean counterintuitive. Meaning
it's the opposite.
It's like flying on instruments, which I did, in a helicopter, which I did for a living. And I can tell you that flying on instruments in a helicopter is, first off, very different from flying in a fixed-wing aircraft, because in a fixed-wing aircraft, if all else fails, if you have a reasonable, I mean, your engine's still running and you're at some reasonable altitude and you get completely disoriented and confused, let go of the controls. And if your aircraft is trimmed properly, it will stabilize in normal flight. The aircraft basically flies better than the pilot does. The helicopters that I flew were quite different in that
before
if you,
the computers were right, involved in helping out.
If you let go of the controls, the helicopter will assume its normal position, which is upside, which is inverted nose down, which somewhere before it got there, the rotor system would come off and we'd all just die. So the helicopter is always trying to kill itself, and it's up to the pilot, particularly in a situation where the horizon is invisible, I'm in the clouds in the dark, suddenly, unexpectedly, which happened to me on a number of occasions, it's up to the pilot to keep everything level because the helicopter wants to commit suicide. And the only way to keep things level in under those circumstances is to look at the data that is being reported by the instruments.
Because your body is going to lie to you.
And believe that data. Now, at some level, I didn't believe, because sometimes when I'd be holding the controls, I'd be leaning hard to the side because my inner ear was telling me the helicopter was, for instance, rolling violently to the right, when in fact all the instruments said we are straight and level, climbing, everything is cool. You have to believe not the rhetoric,
the emotion,
but the facts. And the facts are, for example, the United States of America has the lowest debt when compared with GDP of any major developed nation on the planet. The United, we were talking a little earlier about,
if you measure debt the same way across the board.
Right.
Yes.
Period.
Because the debt numbers that are reported makes it look like we have more than 100% of GDP in our outstanding debt.
But we don't.
But we don't. If you look at the debt that is just due to the government from the government, which they could at any point say, no, we don't owe ourselves anymore.
There's an interesting aspect to our government in that we, for some reason, and I've never completely understood this, insist on including possible future expenses. The present value of possible future expenses generated artificially as part of our debt.
It's kind of like if you have a child and you calculate all of the food expenses for the child until they are out of the house.
Not
the
just
college
food,
expenses,
college,
the
medical,
clothing expenses,
medical, everything.
And then say that's a debt you have now on birth.
And you do this at a, it makes it even worse, you do this at a very low interest rate. You assume that you're not going to invest the money to pay for college.
Correct.
You're
just
going
all
to
due.
Simply put it in a bank deposit at 0%.
That's kind of how we look at our debt in the United States.
On the other
States.
Hand, let's just say we compare our debt to that of China. China doesn't have Social Security. It doesn't have Medicare. It's so many things it doesn't have, so it doesn't include that.
It does have a pension for elderly people. It does have that.
Not much of one.
Not much of one.
It's very insignificant. The Europeans, on the other hand, have a huge social
welfare
debt. They don't include it when they talk about their national debt. It's
at
like
all.
It's because
it's gone off the books.
They make no pretense that that debt has a funding vehicle like our Social Security Trust Fund. They simply say we pay for it each year out of existing revenue,
which is really what we do. Yeah.
And the point is that it's hard to dig through the facts because there's so many people who want so much rhetoric. You're living, but
the news
all,
media is sold by rhetoric. That's how you get sales.
Here's the key. If you want to know how well the United States is doing, so if you're investing, how well your portfolio is likely to do over the long term, it's very simple. You back up and you take a look at the things that count, that are not likely to be phony. For example, how are we doing demographically in the United States? And there's two really, really, really strong signals. We're doing really, really, really well.
One is
our population is growing. Jake mentioned the fact that the population of California is actually shrinking. And interestingly enough, the people with the money are leaving.
They're coming
to
Texas.
And the people without the
Florida.
Money are coming in, which means that they have a problem down the road.
Yeah, and where they're going, this is another part of the experiment.
They're going
Florida
to Texas.
And Texas, the places with no income tax.
And so
no state income tax.
That's a really crucial thing for determining if you wanted to live someplace over the long term. The weather's much nicer in California, by the way.
Yeah. And they have a much beautiful, much much more beautiful beaches. There's a lot of other things that are really nice about California, where
It's a great place to take a vacation, but I wouldn't want to live there.
Yeah, if you think about San Francisco and how beautiful that is, we don't have anything to compare to that in Texas at all, anywhere.
And you'd have to make probably three times the income to live at the same standard of living
exactly.
there. Exactly. Well, now, and then, but let's take this and look at the rest of the world. There's only one developed nation on the planet, and you're going to think this is crazy. There's only one major developed nation on the planet whose population is growing. The rest of them are shrinking.
Japan's population shrinking. China, and China, I wouldn't call a developed nation,
but
is
Europe,
still shrinking.
All of
Western Europe and Europe, the European Union as a whole, is shrinking. Mm-hmm. Eastern Europe is growing.
And the Europeans are getting much older as the median age in Europe is going up. Then there's the other side of that same equation. Look at where people want to go. Look at people, and we say that Texas does have a much more healthy economy.
This is a great example
as
of
a result,
where they want to go.
Where you have freedom and a healthy economy, they tend to go together, by the way.
Yeah.
You have people moving in that direction. And so there's growth in that area, both in population, both through birth and through immigration. Now,
there's one other piece there.
What's that?
This is a really measurable thing. If you look at the waiting lists at U.S. universities and colleges from people from other developed nations.
Right.
Okay. If we did the same sort of thing like the trade deficit where we said how many products are we exporting, how many are we importing. We have people from all over the world waiting in line, wanting to go to college here.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a very small number of people wanting to go to college somewhere else. Because if you think about going to someone and saying, I want a job and I went to MIT, versus going to someone and saying, I went to the Polish Institute for Technology.
Yeah.
Poland has great engineers, but they're educated in the
right.
United States, and they tend to stay here when they get educated here. And I realize people think of that as a horrible immigration thing. That's how America started. It's who we are.
We have all of these things going for us. And if we sit back and very carefully look at the numbers, CIA, by the way.
Yeah, they've got a great website for this stuff.
They are really, really good at producing a good website for saying what's going on around the world in each country. And they also run an analysis. I'm surprised Snowden hadn't claimed he found it or something. on the United States, and they put it side by side with everybody else. It's the same thing they use to brief the president, and it is far. No one's ever challenged the accuracy of what they put up there. You happen to be living, folks. This is
well, nobody
we
that's
approach,
lived has challenged
as
the
as we approach Thanksgiving. I want to say to you, you're living in the most prosperous, best future oriented, most successful socioeconomic experiment in the history of the world, and there are new things. I just read an article that said the people were concerned about the dearth of innovation of new things.
What? Seriously?
They obviously are not reading the same publications
okay.
I
yes.
am.
Take a moment, listeners, and think of the things that you're doing today that you didn't do 15 years ago. Didn't do 5 years ago.
Right.
If you think of smartphones, if you think of computers, if you think of cars, if you think of all of the things, the technology there. You think of the companies that are developing that technology. 98%, and this is as of June when we were in Florida, 98% of those companies are American. Google, Apple. Just go down the list of the innovating companies.
Oh,
and they're American.
Did you get the announcement by Google on where Google Glass will be manufactured?
I didn't. Where is that?
They were going to manufacture. I don't remember which country overseas they were planning on doing the manufacturing.
Mm-hmm. They decided to do it here instead?
They're going to be doing it in California, of all places.
Interesting.
They determined that the quality of work that's done in, I think it's not Cupertino, it's someplace right around in there, one of the, but the point is that they have determined that they're going, and this is an economic determination, folks. This is not because they love America. They just look where they have money all over the world and they haven't brought back here.
This is an economic decision.
They've decided to make, and those of you who don't know what Google Glass is, they're basically a pair of glasses that you put on that can take photographs. It basically does everything your smartphone will do.
But you also talk to it.
It
has a heads-up display that is very similar to a pilot's heads-up display, only better. And it overlays information on the world around you. It has GPS in it, just like your smartphone does, and it has an angle, so it knows what you're looking at. And if you, for instance, this is a great one. At some point when it is much more mainstream, we'll be able to walk down the street. This already exists in Google Glass. You'll be able to walk down the street with the GPS thing on, and it has an arrow pointing at where you're supposed to go so that you can do your walk, and it shows exactly what turn you're supposed to do. You can do this while driving. You can, what's more, you can look at a building, know the address of the building, and who's in it based on Yellow Pages or based on White Pages. You, as you're driving and you say, is that the building that we want? Right now, you've got a GPS destination will be on the right. Only now it will be glowing. The building that you want is right there. That's the one that we're going to.
And if you, you can literally make a telephone call from your Google Glass by talking to it. This is something invented in the United States. We have Google, same company.
Yeah. Self-driving cars.
As self-driving cars that are now have, I don't remember how many hundreds of thousands of miles in California they put on them now.
And
no accidents.
And this is a typical human has an accident every 10,000 miles.
It's pretty frequent.
Yeah.
I don't think I've had that many accidents.
And these cars have been, now they're in the millions of miles without an accident. That's pretty amazing.
So I guess what I want to say, we're coming up on the, we're not to Thanksgiving yet, but I want you to think about the fact that you won the lottery. You're living in the United States of America. There's a lot of people who make a lot of money trashing the United States, trashing our economy, trashing the Federal Reserve, trashing the government. Folks, I've lived other places. I've lived a long time. You're living in the best and one of the most wonderful places, well, the most wonderful, amazing, magical place in the history of the world. And I realize it's a very unpopular, and it's funny because I was listening to Merle Haggard's song, Okie from Muskogee, you know, and all of his songs back when we who are conservatives and during the Vietnam War, we were saying, love it or leave it. This is a great country. And it's odd. It's switched roles. The conservatives seem to be the people most angry about the condition of the country and most ready to trash.
Right.
Amazing. Anyway,
as of March, one Google car had gone 300,000 miles without an accident. Mm-hmm. And that's one car. The whole, if you add all of the miles for all of the cars that are driverless at this point and put them together, it's way into the millions without an accident.
Right.
So,
and we have a caller on 866-597-1400. Thank you for being patient. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach.
Hey, it's Doug from Austin. How are you?
Hello, Doug from Austin. I'm doing quite well. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, good. I got two questions for you. One of them is about the national debt. Obviously, right now around $17 trillion.
Actually,
you're all talking heads on Fox, which you mentioned earlier.
It's
not
really $17 trillion.
It's actually $14 or $13.5 trillion.
With regard to considering Social Security and all these other things that we add into our number, you just mentioned that, which was very helpful.
Right.
But the question is, and I'll get off after I give you both questions, is what dollar amount, what level is comfortable for the national our national economy, our GDP?
Good
so
question.
We've got the lowest debt as compared to GDP of any country in the world. So what is that ratio? Where does it need to be, and where we really do need to be alarmed?
Okay.
And the second question was, I just watched a video on Netflix, a documentary regarding how pretty much everything in the United States that you could buy at Walmart or Target or almost any store is manufactured in China, because they, you know, they're very low labor costs, the government subsidies for manufacturing, and you know, America is literally just outsourcing all of its jobs, so we don't really make anything. I know you just talked about Google manufacturing those glasses here. One of the big things the documentary pointed to is that anytime you send your iPhones over there, your computers over there, you're literally exporting your intellectual property. And they even talked about Boeing sending its most recent aircrafts over there to get built. So what impact is that going to have, you know, going forward with regard not only to jobs but the national economy? And, you know, is there, you know,
well, I've got an answer. I've got an answer to that.
Some way to do it less expensively here in the United States.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the great questions.
You had two questions there.
Yeah. You
versus what is the level of debt?
That's comfortable.
And first, again, the crucial element in determining what level of debt is comfortable, first, there is no fixed number. It depends on what the economy is doing at that moment. But this is a really, really crucial thing, is to figure out what the real debt is.
Yeah.
And what is phonied debt? And I say phony, that's probably not a good term. It's an artificial accounting number that has little real meaning, except that it says that if you freeze the economic conditions as they are today, and you freeze the economic image as it is today, and you freeze the requirements as they are today, and you extend them 30 years into the future, they really look bad.
Yeah.
But you know, that is true of so many, many, many things, and it never works out that way.
Last week I did a study on this. Let me throw one thing in here,
okay? Mm-hmm. I was watching a TV show from about 10 years ago, and they were talking about peak oil and the disaster that's coming because the oil, this is around shortly after 2000,
mm-hmm.
oil production. We'd already passed peak oil, and we were in for a plummeting decline in the availability of oil in the world, and that by 2010, oil could be $1,000 a barrel.
Right.
In fact, we have discovered
lots more oil,
more recoverable oil in the last 2 years than we knew existed 24 months ago in the world. So that's an example of why doing projections will get you in a lot of
trouble.
But go ahead.
Okay, as far as the debt of the United States, you were saying this, you have to use real numbers. If you look at the European debt, for instance, the debt that the European countries hold, it's separate from the European central debt, because there isn't really a European central government to hold debt. There's some small amount there, but if you look at the percentage of the whole, it's very tiny. Each country has debt, and some of it is owned externally, a big chunk of it is owned externally, and some of it's owned internally. In the United States, we have a very different setup. We have about $5 trillion of our debt is owned by foreign countries. About $4 trillion of the debt that is talked about is actually owned by the country itself, by government. And then if you go a step further and you say $2.5 trillion is owned by the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is the American central bank. It is not part of the government. But the Federal Reserve Act says that the debt that is owned by the Federal Reserve from the United States government can be forgiven at any point. So if you take out the $6.5 trillion of debt that can be forgiven by the federal government at any point to itself and to the American Central Bank, if you will, the Federal Reserve, you realize that now we're suddenly talking about $11.5 trillion. Our GDP is right around, what is it this year, 16?
I'm looking it up right now, as a matter of
fact. I think it's $16 trillion.
Roughly 16 trillion.
15.8, something like that.
For 2012, it was 15.68.
Yeah, we're up from that, and I think it's closer to 16 now. So these are numbers that I did the study a couple of weeks ago, so they're not all truly fresh in my head, but our GDP, if you will, is like our gross income to a family. before taxes, before expenses. If you look at a family and you say their income before all the taxes and stuff comes out of it is $100,000, it's not unusual for that family to have a $200,000 mortgage. We would consider that to be healthy. We're way below that as a country.
And by the way, our actual debt is $12.2
trillion. $12.2
trillion? Yeah.
Is that minus the Federal Reserve debt?
No, debt held by the public, United States Treasury.
Okay. If
period.
You, right.
It's basically simply
yeah,
saying...
Yeah, I broke that down further. $2.5 trillion right. of that is owned by the Federal Reserve, which is forgivable under the Federal Reserve Act.
So basically we have about a $10 trillion real
correct.
Debt.
Correct.
Okay.
And what we when we look at that and we say that we've got a $16 trillion GDP and a $10 trillion debt, we are in a very healthy place. What is a comfortable place? Well, that is obviously a comfortable place.
Well,
could we have more debt and still be healthy? Yes. Do we want more debt? No. No. And that's something that it isn't a crisis, though. And when people talk about the debt as a crisis, that's the point where we bring it up and say it could become a crisis. We do need to make actions to keep it from becoming a crisis. But at this point, we're very healthy. And if we continue to shrink government, as we have been doing accidentally because we couldn't come up with a solution to do it on purpose, it's not going to be a problem at all. Our economy is growing faster than our debt is.
There's another critical element, and we do actually have to get commercials. The average interest rate on that $12 trillion debt is 1.98%. A year ago, it was 2.075. So the bottom line to it, now we're talking about the market, what's called marketable debt. That's the debt held by the public. That's the debt that we actually have to pay real interest rate on, as opposed to making notebook notations
yeah.
that we may or may not have to pay.
Just as an example of that, all profit on debt owned by the Federal Reserve purchased from the United States, all profit, which would be the interest, goes back to the federal government.
Right.
So the Federal Reserve is being paid interest by the federal government on the debt it holds. It then turns around and gives that interest back to the federal government.
Mm-hmm. So the fact is that our debt is at this point in economic cycle with low interest rates and us digging our way out of a recession. I know that theoretically it's over, but it'll be over when employment gets back up to a reasonable level. In
fact, right.
Our debt is really very, very healthy, and it's on the low side of historic. The other thing that's a really crucial element is which way is it going? In other words, you can't take the current debt and look at it as a static number, and you can't take the dollar numbers and project them out to infinity. Neither one of those are good economic practices mm-hmm. whatsoever. The fact is, the deficit is the key, and the deficit
correct.
Has a powerful trend to it right now. Since 2009, the deficit has been falling at the fastest rate since the era immediately following World War II. Now, that is, frankly, going to surprise a lot of people, just like it probably will surprise a lot of people to find out that the government, the United States government, the federal government, is shrinking at the fastest rate it has shrunk in terms of expenditures, in terms of employees, in terms of everything that it does, is shrinking at, again, the fastest rate since post-World War II. The deficit is shrinking. The government is shrinking.
And GDP is rising faster than, if the deficit is shrinking every year and GDP is going up, we are going to hit at some point, it's going to be way in the future, if
about 2016.
Right. And now that's a projection
now, whatever,
as well.
Sometime around 2016, if everything continues pretty much on the slow growth track that we're on right now and the slow employment growth track that we're on right now,
and
which
we don't
is
increase,
probably true.
And we don't increase spending a lot to get yeah. deficits back up there.
We will see all those numbers come together in a very interesting fashion, so that even though the dollar value of the debt may still be rising, we still may have a deficit, but if the economy is growing faster, then we are increasing the debt.
In essence, we are lowering the debt
yeah.
as a percentage of our GDP.
That's
the thing. It's the same as if you got a raise from $100,000 a year to $120,000 a year, and your debt only went up mm-hmm. $2,000.
And it's very critical to remember something here, and that is that the big economic downturns have occurred twice. The two largest economic downturns in the history of the United States, one of them was in following 1837, and the other one was following 1929. The only two times the United States has been out of debt.
It's also two times right before huge economic disasters.
Yeah, and so there is definitely a correlation.
Some debt is needed. It is necessary. Right. It is one of the major tools that the Federal Reserve has to fight inflation and fight deflation
is the
United States debt.
The fact that the United that for instance, China, who is a major player in the economy, and that leads me to the next item that you were going to talk about. I want to discuss this.
Export of jobs, yes.
The jobs that we are exporting are jobs that Americans don't want, by definition. If Americans wanted the jobs and they were willing to work at the jobs at a price that they, the workers, could afford to pay. In other words, if you go to the store and you buy a garment, the garment was probably designed in the United States and it was manufactured overseas. But the point is, the people who buy it, if they worked a full 40-hour week making those garments, could not produce the garments at an economic level that will enable them to buy said garment.
Yeah, that's the key.
What we can do in the United States is we can do extremely high-quality work. The majority of Toyota, which is the highest quality, arguably the highest quality automobile manufacturer in the world today, mass manufacturer, the majority of their automobiles are made in the United States.
What's more, the majority of their company is owned by U.S. citizens, mm-hmm. which is a huge thing.
And the fact is, we make the robots that make the cars.
Right. And this is something that is historical. If you look back as far back as you want, even to before the Civil War, when jobs were being exported from the North to the South, you see headlines about this, about... originally, the North was the center of industry because it had running water, which is what you made the mills.
Waterfalls.
You had all this water flowing that you could power textile factories with. You get the cotton from the South and take it up North, and then you make textiles out of it. Well, with the steam engine, that shifted. The Northerners were making more money. They were more affluent. They couldn't afford to make the textile at the low enough price there, so they exported it. Every time we export a job, the job tends to disappear within about 10 years.
And let me tell you...
Let me explain that just a second. If you think about VCRs...
I have about as many commercials.
We had a lot of commercials
to play.
Left. Yes, okay. Anyway, we've got to go... there's a lot more to talk about there. I guess we can talk about it next week. Let's play some commercials.
Okay, we're going to play some commercials. Suffice to say that we're going to see another wave of jobs disappearing and more manufacturing in the United States. But we'll be back after these important words from KTEM sponsoring. And we're back with more of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we were sitting here. I did want to make an anti-commercial in the last few minutes that we have here.
Yes.
If you have Kaspersky antivirus, Jeff McClure's humble opinion is when it comes time to renew, get rid of it.
Yep.
It is a Russian company subsidized by the Russian government, dominated by somebody who doesn't like us very much.
And if you think that the NSA is the only act out there looking at people's information, think again. A Russian subsidized company that knows what all the files are on your computer.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. Make it real quick. Go ahead.
Be kind enough to recommend me a book to learn more about the Federal Reserve System. I know if you want a negative side, you get Creature from Jekyll Island.
Whoa.
But if you want to get something that's objective, I mean, tells you how it works, what would you recommend?
In Fed We Trust.
In Fed We Trust. Yep.
That's good one. Okay.
And Fed, take it. There are.
Pardon me?
In Fed We Trust.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
There are parts of that book that are overblown.
Wessel or whatever his name is from the Wall Street Journal wrote it, and it's you know, it basically tells how the Fed kept us from falling into the mud and how much
talks about what it does.
And it's either that and read the Federal Reserve Act.
Yeah, which is what I did. That's what I would recommend.
There is no grand conspiracy, and we need one, and we did get rid of an earlier version of the Federal Reserve and plunged us ourselves into the conceivably the worst depression and war in the history of our nation. I don't want to do that again.
Conceivably. It was definitely the worst war in our nation's history.
Basically, the Civil War can easily be traced to the fact that Andrew Jackson decided to get rid of the Federal Reserve.
Only it wasn't called the Federal Reserve
Bank. It's called the Second Bank of the United States, but still it was the same thing.
Yeah, and we're out of time. Thank you very much for the call.
Thanks for the call. All right. And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And if you would like to contact us either during the week, you'll have a real live human being answer the phone, or on the weekend, it's voicemail. You can give us a local call. It's 947-1111. Otherwise,
you can reach us toll-free. Again, it's voicemail now, but during the week, it's a live voice, 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. We get a lot of information and questions from radio listeners during the week through email. So if you would like us to talk about something in particular, you can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Or you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. There's plenty of podcasts there. So that if you are not right at the level of insanity, listen to that for a few hours, and you will be right there among us.
And if any of you are offended by the fact that I think that we're living in the greatest country at the greatest time in the history of the world, I apologize, but it's the truth.
So until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach. Have a great weekend.
News Radio 1400 KTEM. Serving Central Texas, KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.